Straight from South Africa.
This is the strange and mysterious world with your hosts, Lee Straighten and William Pollinson.
Welcome to Strange and Mysterious World. This is Lee and William. We are your hosts tonight, and this is season one, episode 20. We've hit the 2-0, man.
The 20th episode, dude.
We're going strong. It's going well. So our last podcast we had on Raylanism, we forgot to mention a couple of things. So, you know, we were talking about the arseholes. The thing is, they're still going. Because from Canada, they actually moved across. They got booted out of Canada, and they moved across to Japan. And actually, Japan is where they currently are now.
Yes,
they're still going, and they're still in Japan.
It's just him, though. It's just him. It's that...
No. There's still all that that chicky that's the one. She's kind of gone into hiding a bit, but because she's been receiving death threats and that, Brigitte. But she's still with them. And there's a couple of guys that are still out with him, and he's got a big movement in Japan. It's huge.
Yeah, no, I saw on the documentary, like at the end, it shows like a room full of Japanese, like cheering for him and loving him. So it looks like he's done it quite a while. He's got quite a knack of like just going around and getting a following.
Yeah, 100%. So we thought I just thought I'd end it off because we didn't kind of mention where it ended up. But that's where it ended.
Yeah.
All right. We're going to be bringing Carol on in a few minutes. We're going to be chatting a little bit about meditation and Buddhism and metaphysics. Good evening, Carol.
Okay, so Carol. Okay. Well, welcome. Thank you for coming on. I've been looking forward to this.
Thank you. Yes, I was just a bit worried because we had that terrible storm. So I thought, with that noise, it's never going to work.
Yeah,
no. Trust me, we can't hear half the stuff that goes on in the background. So it should be fine.
Yeah,
but it was very bad. You know, we had hectic lightning and I was just a bit scared of my router, but it's all over. So we don't have that problem.
Okay, great. Tell us about when you met the Dalai Lama. How did you meet the Dalai Lama? And how did that, I mean, you've told me that before, but tell our audience, like it's a lovely story.
It's an interesting story. That was a time when I had actually also become a friend of Tibet, if you like. They don't have an embassy in South Africa. They just had, let's say, Friends of Tibet Society. And there were Tibetans there. And you could go once a month, or I think it was once a month, and share, if you like, in their beliefs and how they felt. And that was another place that made me feel like home. That's one thing about any Buddhist society. It's very welcoming. It's very open. And I had decided that I was going to go to Tibet. Just let me plug my... Here we go.
Yes.
And there's a small temple in Johannesburg, I think, that it's also somewhere near Auckland Park. And I knew a lot of the people who used to be there regularly, met them, you know, in the circle, if you like, particularly of the Friends of Tibet. And they let us know, there were about 200 people who could be accommodated, that His Holiness was going to be visiting, and that was his last ever visit. And we were invited to attend if we want to, but to make sure that we let them know. And I asked if I could bring with me. And I took my late boss, Dr. Levine, because he called himself a retired Swami, but he owned a homeopathic company, and he always said he was a poor monk. His wife owned the company, but he was very devout and very particular. So I took him with me, and that's how we got to meet him. But as I told you, William, we were sitting in the temple where we had to all be, I think, about an hour before he was due to arrive, but there was a lot of security. And about a half an hour or so before he actually arrived, I don't know how to explain this, but you could sense a change in the ambiance in the room. If I was speaking with people who are accustomed to metaphysics, I would say you could feel a raised vibration. And when he arrived, this man is humble, but he is a personage. You don't miss him. He's an enormous energy. It's all the only way I can describe him. Marvelous person. In fact, I can understand why people will do whatever they can to protect him as a personality, not just because he's the Dalai Lama. He is a fantastic man. And we sat in a smaller place where he was addressing us and answering questions, which had basically been vetted before. One thing I do remember that he said, when asked the first question that was allowed, is, what is the best way to meditate? And he looked at us and he started smiling and he said, a chicken sitting on a wire can also sleep. What he meant is, if you're sitting there with your eyes closed and being all pious, doesn't necessarily mean that you are meditating. And he also said, you don't have to sit for an hour and melt the snow. He said, 15 minutes is long enough, and have an intention. Know why you are getting your mind quiet. What do you want to get clarity on? What is the purpose of what you're doing? And that, to me, is something that I've carried forward and told all my students. And you've seen my meditations, William. I think there's only one or two that are a little bit longer than that. Coming back to Pretoria, though, Dr. Levine was very upset because he was a vegetarian. Even although his parents had owned originally the restaurant in the Pretoria Zoo, and he used to love his steak. Mm-hmm. He said, the only thing about the Dalai Lama that he's not happy about is he eats meat. So I said, the doctor has to eat meat. There's not a tremendous amount of vegetables in Tibet. And when I was there, that's true. There isn't. You know, the yak becomes the source of everything. Food, clothing, tents. It's a valuable animal in Tibet. So that's the reason why they did eat meat. They had to survive. And going to Tibet, it was almost like a deja vu kind of thing, because you could sense this, I want to call it sacred atmosphere, in certain temples where the Chinese had not yet brought chaos, and more particularly in the Potala Palace and in the Dalai Lama's summer palace, which, by the way, is where he fled from, apparently at 9 o'clock at night. And there's a clock in one of the rooms which had stopped at 9 o'clock. And we were told it never moved again. We weren't allowed to take pictures, but one of my group did. So you could actually tangibly feel a sort of reverence, is what I want to call it, in the temples and in the Potala. And I understood much better then why Buddhism made so much sense to me in terms of its basic principles of genuine, just compassion and non-judgmental and not causing any harm. Basically, those are the things. And remember, at the time, things were very different in the Buddhist communities in Tibet, because there was no threat of, what do I call it, intrusion. Okay. Even although originally the people of Tibet, by the way, were a very fierce nation before they became Buddhist. And they had to, because they had to fight off the Mongolians, they had to fight off the Indians, they had to fight off the Chinese to keep their little country. And the first king who arrived, who they made king, by the way, he came from India. And they asked him, where do you come from? And he pointed upwards. So they, but he was pointing to the back. And he meant India. And they thought he meant heaven. So.
Or he was or he was an alien.
Yeah. So they constructed a palace for him on top of the highest hill that they could find, you see, so that he could be closer to home. And basically, that's when peaceful Buddhism, if you like, became more prevalent. And there were three classes of Buddhism in Tibet. Things change, right? And they become a little easier for us Westerners to understand. At that time, it wasn't easy to understand because there wasn't so much common language. And that's another thing that I can tell you. Any temple can only be called, if it's got serving monks, a monastery, if there are holy books, if there are monks, and if there are images of the seven aspects of Buddha. Otherwise, it is not a monastery. We visited a nunnery in Tibet, and they were, how can I pause? Exactly the same as the monks, excepting they were ladies, but also very strict in their practices and very passionate in their practice. Now, I think that anybody who wants to understand what being passionate about your belief system really means is that can have a good look at the history and the present day of the Buddhist practices, because they don't compromise. And because they are willing to accept other beliefs without judging them and without joining them, this is what I try to carry through to my students, and that's how I teach. I teach metaphysics is based on the teachings of the ancients, but 90% of them are presently being proven by various sciences. For example, let me take something easy. I don't know if you've heard about Akashic.
Yeah, the Akashic Records.
Yeah, you have. Good.
Yeah.
So astrophysics has accepted that. And they call it the A field.
The A field?
Yes. That's the place where consciousness contains all the knowledge of everything that ever was, ever will be, and ever is, because time is man-made. It's a linear thing. It doesn't, time really doesn't exist, if I could put it to you that way. We make time. But if you look at interdimensional understanding of metaphysics, you can understand that much better. And there is a way of doing that. It takes a bit of time. Another thing that the Buddhists, of course, also teach is mastering your thoughts. In other words, instead of letting your emotions and your mind, it's always going to run you into all kinds of devious downhills. You should learn to become quiet and become the master of your thoughts, of your responses, and of your mind. Mm. And that's essentially what a lot of meditation is for.
So let me ask you, sorry, let me ask you a question, because there's a lot of people that have always asked me this question about meditation.
Well,
the 15-minute thing, I agree with totally. Myself and Will argue about it, but I say 15 minutes and then I'm happy to carry on. Will's like a half an hour to an hour. I'm like, no, 15 minutes is more than enough for me. Otherwise, I fall asleep. People have actually asked me the question. How,
sorry. Do you sit or do you lie down?
I sit.
Good. Okay.
Yeah. Sit with my feet on the floor and I don't cross my legs. I sit in a chair and excellent. My palms normally facing up. But anyway, so the meditation thing, now a lot of people don't know how to do it. They ask, what are you supposed to do? You're supposed to clear your mind. What are you supposed to think of? You know, there's a lot of people that get a little bit confused when they're trying to meditate. A lot of people say they can't, because yes, as soon as they sit down and they say, you, you've got to think of a flame as an example. They can't, because all these thoughts come in their mind, and it's the monkey mind, you know, the monkey brain that. So how do you do it? What is the plan? What is the trick?
All right. It's no trick. It's really a discipline. First of all, you need to want to learn how to control your mind before you can actually say you are properly meditating. Because when you are in deep meditation, there is no thought that disturbs you. Okay? And only one way to start doing that, if you are Western and you've never meditated before, and that is to start with the breath. In other words, you close your eyes, you sit the way you say you are, so that your lungs are properly functional. If you lie down, your lungs are collapsed. You can't breathe in deeply right to the diaphragm. So it's sitting with your back relaxed. It's good to have your feet on the floor, because then you're grounded, so to speak. You can have your palms upward. You don't have to, but you can. And your head and your neck should be comfortable. And you start off only for 10 minutes. You set a timer for 10 minutes. And you close your eyes so that you don't have visual distraction, because it's very easy to get distracted. And you follow your breath. In other words, you breathe in and you actually start following where that breath is going to. You feel it where you are sending it to, your diaphragm, okay? And then as you exhale, you follow it coming out again. Some people have to do that easily for a month or more. Some people not. Depends on your personality. If you're ADD, it's going to take longer. But you start, first of all, following the breath, because that is in training the monkey mind to obey intention and not the wild thoughts it wants to have. Those who can already meditate would say to you, well, if a thought crosses your mind, just watch it and tell it you'll deal with it later. I know that that's not practical, because none of us can do that. So we have to learn to exclude it. So we've got to find something else to focus on, and it's the breath. Basically, that's where it starts. I don't mind if William wants to send you the meditations that I recorded 24 years ago.
Sure.
Because they are still relevant, and each one of them fitted with a particular lesson. I only recorded them because one of my students asked me to. So I started off with the very basic 10-minute thing, which is breathing, but then you incorporate a sense of light coming in the top of your head. That's when you now start teaching the brain to feel energy, okay? That's the 10-minute one, the white light one. It's got nothing to do with anybody's belief system. It's got no religious connotation. It is simply to relax you and to make you feel in charge of yourself and to know that you are not threatened by anything. In other words, you can handle life. You can handle what comes to you while you stay calm, because that's the whole object. If you are calm, you can handle life. If you get upset, it's difficult. We all know that. So the key is to try to get calm, which is what I taught the children at Kroate to do, because they were under a lot of stress. And a lot of competitive stress. And they needed a technique that they could use in order to conquer that fear before they had to do whatever they were going to be doing. So basically, that's what I tell people who come to me, and especially the ones who say, I can't. And I had a little boy at the time who was 9 years old and definitely ADD, he was diagnosed. His mother was a student of mine, and she was one of my first students who learned to bend a spoon with her thoughts and her mind and her energy, which I did myself to prove that it can be done, and then taught certain students to do it. And her son watched her and wanted to do the same, and she said to me, can I let him? I didn't think he would. I said, yeah, okay, and he did. But it's a discipline, and you have to want to do it above and beyond anything else, because that proves to you that nobody else and nothing else, if you like, is running your life except you.
Yeah.
If you can persuade a stainless steel object to behave differently, then who is running your life?
Yeah.
Exactly. So we say you're teaching people how to bend spoons.
So like me and Lee are going to do that course.
Hold on, we'll do this pen now.
You can, but I'm warning you that it means you have to become so disciplined that you set aside a certain time, let's say when you start about 20 minutes every day for the various stages that I'll give you.
Fantastic. I'm done. I'm used to that.
What? The other reason, by the way, that I teach that is because I teach energy healing. In other words, energy transference. Not to be confused with Reiki. Reiki is prescriptive. I don't prescribe. But I wanted them to understand, the students that I was teaching, exactly how much accountability we have when we dabble in another energy field.
Are you talking like kind of like a Shaktipat? When you go to see a spiritual leader and he gives you the energy, it's like a Shaktipat and they transfer the energy
that
to you.
That sort of thing, yes. You are affecting the other individual on an energy level, on a physical level, on a psychological level, on a mental level, and you need to know that.
Is that through your aura?
Sorry?
Is that through your aura? Because obviously your aura has energy and various levels of energy.
Okay, you want to learn to bend spoons. That's through your intention. You are channeling energy with an intention, and your only intention should be to be a conduit of energy for whatever has to happen for this particular person, not what you decide must happen. And you don't dump your rubbish on them either. So it's a big responsibility, which is why I taught bending spoons. Because that shows you how powerful your thoughts are. And science is proving that now. By the way, I've followed Greg Braden for many, many years because he's, first of all, a scientist and, secondly, a spiritual person.
Yeah, I'd agree with that.
Yeah. And he is busy speaking with also McTaggart. Also, she wrote The Field, which you should read. Science has proven the power of thought.
But it's also, I mean, just the whole Planck theory in quantum physics.
In quantum physics, the
Planck theory, like a thing, when you observe it, it does something completely different to when it's not observed. So like if you...
And so, the so observer it's a way, yeah. is changed more than that which is being observed. Part of that theory.
Okay. So, yeah.
Part of the string theory too. And the astronaut that I told you, William, who came back and who was, to start off, an atheist, and he was one of the first lot to go into space. He didn't land on the moon, but he went into space, and Mitchell, and he came back. And as a scientist, he had declared himself an atheist. And he was asked, if you had to say one thing that made the biggest impression on you in this experience, what will it be? And he said that everything is consciousness. And consciousness basically is awareness.
Yeah.
So I rest my case. There we go. Everything. Yeah. You can look at what they're talking about, matter and antimatter. It's all consciousness.
Yeah.
It's awareness. In other words, we can even say, it's intelligence, because awareness is intelligence, isn't it? So if he came back, and just from that experience, as an atheist scientist, declared that, that's pretty profound in my book. And I have done distance healing with a small group on a person that we didn't know, had never met, was in another country. We simply had a picture of her, and we were told that she was in a coma, and I led the group. We did intentional meditation, and we could actually see her image on the picture changing In other words, the dark shadows started lifting and we heard that she regained consciousness. We never met her, ever.
Just tell the story about your son and having a... Yes.
Okay. I decided that I couldn't support my two sons as an ordinary secretary or clerk, so I became a work-study officer. And I was, in fact, there were only two female work-study officers in the country at the time. So it was said, you know, that you're doing a man's job, so to speak. And my boss at the company I was working at was, he was a very big, I'll just call him an asshole. My youngest son at the time was 9. I put him in a boarding school because I was working 3 jobs and studying, and I wanted them to have a consistent environment, safety, blah, 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 the whole thing. They came home regularly, but they phoned me from school, settlers, by the way, George. He developed, he was 9, and he developed jaundice. And as you would know, the closest hospital, so to speak, is the one in Warmbox. So they phoned me and said he's very bad, they have to take him to Warmbox. And let's say that this was on a Monday or so. And I, of course, was panicked and I wanted to go and see him because I was told it was bad. He's very, very yellow. And my boss just said to me, sorry, you want to do a man's job, you're going to have to take the punch and wait for the weekend. I couldn't kill him because I needed the job, you see. So I went home very distressed and I thought, okay, I don't know. I was doubtful. I don't know if this is going to work. But everything that I'd read and learned up until then, and I wasn't teaching then, in fact, I was avoiding anything to do with spirituality or metaphysics or anything. I was focusing on career because I had 2 boys to get to school. And I just focused on him. You know, I'm not going to say I prayed, but I suppose people could call it that. But I focused on him being well, if you like. And it wasn't easy. I spent the night literally doing that. You can think if you've got children of your own, how you would be feeling. And the next morning I phoned because the hospital was run by the nuns. And I wanted to find out how my son is. And the nun who answered the phone said to me, she doesn't know how to tell me this. So I thought, you know, the worst that happened. I said, well, just tell me. She said, Mrs. Candiotis, I can't explain it. When we got to him this morning, his pillow was yellow and he was not. It was all gone.
Wow. Sure. So where did you learn to do all that stuff? Was that prior to...
I didn't learn to do it anyway. I read all those books and I made up my mind to do it.
Oh, okay. All right. So now in your school that you teach now, what is it, like an online school or do you teach,
Well, yeah. Before COVID, okay, I used to teach groups at home or other places.
Yeah.
When COVID started, I started doing it online and then I left it for a while. I've now got 2 private students. I think it's changing, if you like, and I've got other things that I also interested in achieving, which are in the same line.
So metaphysics, just kind of getting a little bit onto that. You were saying that we're chatting about the Akashic Records, which is, if I put into maybe, I may be wrong, but that's in the astral realm, which yes. is in our dream state, I suppose, if you want to call it, when we're dreaming, we head off there. Is that same place?
Well, it's dimensional, okay?
Yeah.
First of all, if we look at it scientifically, it's dimensional. So we cannot conceive of the structure, if you like. Mm-hmm. Okay. And it is allegedly said that this is where the energy, which contains the knowledge of everything.
Yeah.
Because your thoughts are energy.
Yeah.
So all energy doesn't dissipate. Ever, it never disappears. It changes its state, if you like. It becomes finer. Okay, I think you understand what I'm trying to say.
Yeah.
And so that is where the ancient teachings said, and Buddhism also said, this is where the knowledge of all that ever was, all that ever will be, and all that is resides, because there is nothing new. Everything has been thought before, has been done before. If you look at history, like common history, and all the discoveries that are being made through archaeology at the moment, and other sciences, you will begin to get a very different picture of what you had before, and that's going to make a lot more sense. And that's the Akashic, where it is said, if you can connect to that part of yourself, in other words, a tiny little bit of energy that holds your present thoughts, you should be able to have an indication into what your path is. Because people say, I don't know what I'm here for. What is my purpose? You have no purpose except to be. But in being, what are you going to influence? That's the thing. So reaching the Akashic, or being able to get to that place where you don't conjure it up in your own mind, is not an easy thing to do. But when you can, when you master bending spoons, I will tell you how to do that too.
Okay.
That's I'm signing up next week.
Well, I said, telling you, we're putting Yuri Geller out of business, your buddy there, William.
Oh, yes. Yeah, we put Yuri Geller out of business.
Yeah. And it is, you know, it's not impossible. And it used to be regarded as, okay, that's just some, you know, yaya. It's not yaya. It's science. It's actually science.
It's science that we don't understand. I said, not understand
we
yet.
We will never understand. Yeah. I mean, even Einstein said, you know, that the only thing he's certain of that there is a lot of is stupidity. So,
well, you have to be very clever to know. You have to be Einstein to know that one.
Yeah. I mean, you know, we know there is so much unknown that we presently cannot even comprehend. But even AI is never going to be able to comprehend that. Because we teach AI, don't we?
Yeah.
So when people are being scared of, you know, AI is going to take over my job, take over my life, it can't. You still have a human mind, which is superior. You have to learn to use it.
Awesome.
Nice way to end it. Just, Carol, for our viewers, if they want to take a course of yours or whatever, is it, I mean, do you feel okay giving your details out here if you want that?
Yes, you can give my email. You do have it. And okay. They can contact me on email and I will get back to them.
Okay. Right, yeah, awesome. Because you also do Akashic readings for people.
Yes, I do.
Yes. And you can do that over online. Like, you don't have to be in person.
Akashic, I prefer to do one-on-one. But if I know the person and I've had contact with them, it's not so difficult to do it online.
Okay.
I've had contact with you, William.
Sorry?
I've had contact with you.
Oh, okay. So
I contacted your personal energy.
Okay, great. So I can do it from Cape Town. That's good.
Yeah, yours is depleted. You need to be reboosted there, but
reprogrammed.
Yeah. I'm trying to reprogram myself every day.
Good. The only way to know that you can actually find your purpose in life is to keep searching for it, never to be satisfied, never to feel that you have now done all, because you never have. It doesn't mean you've got to go and change the world. You just have to change yourself.
Yes, and that's the thing. I mean, if everyone wants world peace, they just change themselves.
It starts with
heal
you and
themselves.
I. Exactly.
That's why I'm saying. But have you got a website or something that people can look you up or?
I had one and we are going to put another one up again.
Okay.
I'm working on it and I do a few podcasts. I'll let you know when I do them and I'll put them online.
Okay, great.
Okay, awesome. Okay.
Well, Carol, thank you so much.
Thank you. It was wonderful having you.
Yeah, thanks, Carol. Yeah, thank you. Yeah, you too, man. Very nice. Thank you. Thanks for your time.
And please let us know when you're doing the spoon bending course, because I want to do that.
Well, you've both got my information. You can contact me and we can set it up.
Okay, all right, cool.
Okay. Fantastic.
Thanks, Carol. Right.
Thank you so much, Carol.
Have a good one. Okay. Cheers.
Bye, bye.
Thanks, Will, again, for your time. And thanks to everyone else for listening. Hope you enjoyed the show. We'll chat to you next week. Have a good evening.
Cool, man, Lee. Cheers, dude.